The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 102 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I am joined by a person who told me that Hearthstone is a fun game before the podcast, Zacho.
How you doing, huh?
Doing all right. Hearthstone is a fun game.
Yeah. Things are looking a lot better after this patch. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good. Yeah, we'll go over it. Diversification, the nerfs didn't kill the decks that they targeted. We have 9 classes rather than 5 or 4 or 6, depending on where you were on ladder in the last patch, but things are looking a lot better. There's a deck that looks a little bit too powerful, but I'm not too concerned with it. I'll explain why later. And yeah.
The platonic ideal of metas is nerf until the best deck is a hunter deck, and then everything is fine.
Everything is fine because people don't respect hunter even when it's good.
Yes.
Even when it's good.
Even when it's the beast deck.
Yeah, Ramp Druid can have a 50% win rate and a 20% play rate like nothing. But a deck like Beast Hunter can have a 55% win rate and its play rate is not going to exceed 10%. That's kind of the difference. When you have a deck that just plays a simple Hearthstone, right? Be the best deck, then I think you're in good shape. It depends on other factors, right? There's a potential problem with that if the game gets boring, right? Because if that's the best deck, then maybe it's not exciting. But in this case, I don't think it is an issue. And also, we have a mini set right around the corner, so
potentially we got a teaser today of Murloc Holmes doing the Charlie Day bulletin board thing. The card arts for many of the prime suspects are on the wall behind him. So we have a Masters tour on October 7th, which means the mini set is either the 27th, the 29th, or the 4th. I projected the 27th from prior patch history, which would give 10 days before the Masters tour. It could easily be closer, but I would expect we've got about a week and a half more.
You don't think there's a chance it's next week? Probably too soon, right?
We would have reveals by now.
Right, that is true.
They like to do the big patches on Tuesdays because they move them from Thursday, so they have time to do a hot fix before the weekend as needed. I would expect the 27th or the 4th, and if there's a Masters tour in the 7th, I think the 4th is too close, so I am anticipating the 27th.
Yeah, it's too close. So there's going to be a normal report, if that is the case, next week on the 22nd, and a podcast. Maybe we will consider making the podcast a mini set preview or something, and maybe do it later than normal, depending on how their reveals go. If it is indeed on the week that starts on the 26th, we'll see what we do, but I don't want to settle things. We'll decide.
We don't have any dates. We don't have any announcements. We don't have anything other than one tweet.
Yeah, so I would like to ideally have a podcast recorded about going over the entire mini set. I think that would be cool because it's not too many cards, right? It's like 35 cards.
We would do class by class probably, which I think we did for Throne of the Tides. I don't remember. It feels like a while ago. But speaking of class by class, we should go over this meta. And we should talk about the most popular class once again. Demon Hunter still, same as our early impressions. A lot of people are playing it. And Relic Demon Hunter is the most popular deck in the format.
Yeah, people want to play Relics. This is certainly a package of cards that lots of people were excited about. It came out of the expansion fairly underpowered. It got buffed. Then you had multiple nerfs, and now it looks to be in a more competitive spot. It's definitely more competitive, more viable than it has ever been. It's looking to hover around the 50% win rate mark at most ranked brackets. Though I will say that because this deck is so popular, then it's kind of suffering for it because it's very easy to target. And it's not particularly powerful, so it's very vulnerable. If it's overplayed and people target it successfully, then obviously it's going to run into problems. And yeah, Relic Demon Hunter is not that good. It definitely suffers in some of the popular matchups. Two of the best decks in the format right now, which is Naga Priest and Beast Hunter, both have a good time queuing into it. It's part of the reason why they're successful. So there's no real concern about Relic Demon Hunter becoming too strong or anything like that.
It is the most medium deck I can remember people getting excited about in a while.
Yeah, it's a very, very mid. It's, you know, there was hype early in the first couple of days of the patch, and that obviously is going to affect its popularity. But and it, you know, it keeps, it's been on a steady rise in play since the launch of the patch. But I think that things will reverse course eventually. I'm already seeing some effect that potentially the report has already had on the popularity of Demon Hunter. And I expect that popularity to relax a little bit. It should be fine. There are some interesting findings about the build. We recommend a couple of weird cards to experiment with in this week's featured list. One is Ambassador Phalen, which makes the deck a lot more fun, personally. But it's also pretty effective at making your Topple the Idol always nuts. Basically, they're always giant board clears because all, you know, the Colossals are just expensive, and if you play Phalen and then Topple the Idol, you're guaranteed to have a huge board clear, and you get to find some Colossal late game that could be relevant. And the other card is Dispossessed Soul. It actually makes a lot of sense why Dispossessed Soul is good in this deck, because if Venomous Scorpid and Teacher are played because you want to find more relics, then Dispossessed Soul does it even better than these cards, because it finds cards from your deck, and you're very likely going to find a relic from it, and having additional relics discovered is a huge boon for this deck. Basically, this deck is all about relics. You want to mull for relics. You want to find them in your opening hand. You want to play them as soon as possible. You're basically Jadrid. The more relics you play, the more likely you are to win. So having that option of, okay, I have a Relic Vault on board, which you will have very often, right? There's a Relic Vault on board. It's not a location that expended very quickly. If you don't have a relic to play with it, to combo with it, then just play a Dispossessed Soul, try to find that relic, and then go. Obviously, it's not a card that you're looking to have in the early game because you'd rather have relics. You're not looking for Dispossessed Soul. You're looking for Vault. That is the best card in the deck, and relics. And if you have, you know, Sigil of Alacrity in turn one, that's pretty good. That's something to do, you know, churn through your deck that way. But it's mostly just play relics. That's what it wants to do. So Soul achieves that goal. In addition to those two cards, I recommend Finley. Finley is pretty good in this deck because, again, having the ability to reset your hand in case you have tapped into no relics. Maybe those relics are at the bottom of your deck. So having a way to reset your hand is pretty good. And the deck has a lot of card draw with Relic of Dimensions. So you're likely going to have a sizable hand, which makes Finley better, right? If you're running a deck that doesn't have a lot of card draw, Finley is going to be worse, right? It's going to be less impactful. Alexstrasza, very popular. Not sure, really don't think that card belongs in this deck. Lots of people just automatically run Chaos Strike. Chaos Strike does nothing for this deck. Chaos Strike is a card that makes sense when you're running, you know, Dread Prison Glaive or, you know, weapon synergies or all sorts of stuff where attack modifiers make sense. As a cycle card, it's not particularly good. It's like running Shiv and Rogue. It doesn't make that much sense.
I think the biggest reason why I see people leaning on it, I've had this experience too, is that the deck feels kind of clunky and there's this impulse to lower the curve and add more cheap cards, but the reality is the deck feels kind of clunky because relics are clunky. Like, it's, you can't just play cards for the purpose of playing cards.
You want something to do on turn two if you don't have Vault. And Far Watch Post does it a lot better. Like, Far Watch Post is a card you can play on turn two and you feel good about it. You're not looking to play Chaos Strike on two, ever. It's just a card that you never want to play. So, like, if you compare Chaos Strike to Dispossessed Soul, then Dispossessed Soul is a lot better, right? In terms of furthering this deck's game plan, cycling for two mana in order to find some card for your deck compared to playing a body, developing, and potentially finding a card from your deck, a copy of it, which could potentially be a relic, which is huge. So you make that comparison, it's easy to understand why Soul is better than a Chaos Strike. Another card that I'm curious about that I'm seeing just popping up, and it makes sense, definitely makes more sense to me than Alexstrasza, is Raid Boss Onyxia, right? Cost 10, can get this counter with Relic of Dimensions, helps you activate your Denathrius. A card that I'm more curious about, that starts to pop up just about in the last couple of days and I'm interested in seeing more of, but the point is, this deck is all about relics. Just remember that. Don't keep Scorpid like a lot of people make, you know, silly mulligan decisions because they don't understand what this deck is about and how askew this deck towards drawing relics. You really don't care about anything else. Like, Sigil of Alacrity, I think, is the only card I would keep in the mulligan that's not a relic synergy card. Anything else is pitched. I don't even keep Far Watch Post. I'm just looking for Vault. I'm looking for the relics, and that is it. And I pretty much do that exclusively in any matchup. I'm pretty sure that's correct. It seems to be correct statistically to do what I do. So try it out. The other thing that I want to talk, this is more broad than just DH, but I'm talking about the popularity of Theotar. You know, after working on this report, it's pretty clear to me that Theotar is perceived to be more powerful than it actually is. The problem is that the you know, perception of power of Theotar is so strong that I doubt that, you know, it's going to drop in play just because of the potential to just completely cheese games with it. But it's very often a liability. What's also interesting in Theotar is that in Demon Hunter, it's best in the mirror. And it's kind of a good mirror card in general, because not only do you take away a card from your opponent that can potentially have synergies and furthers their game plan, when you're playing a mirror matchup, that card is very likely going to be useful for you, right? So it doesn't just disrupt the opponent, it also furthers your game plan. So the only matchup where Theodar makes sense to run in Demon Hunter is because of the popularity of the mirror. That's it. Other than that, Theodar really doesn't do much, or it doesn't do enough in a lot of matchups. Again, I said this before, this deck is all about playing relics as soon as possible. You're about playing your game plan, developing as quickly as possible. You're not really about disrupting your opponents that much. Even in the matchups where Theotar is in theory good, these are matchups where you just want to spam relics. Like a matchup like Ramp Druid, you don't need Theotar to deny the Denathrius or something. Your goal is to develop giant phantasms, right? Like, you don't care about what they do that much. So that's kind of what my point is. And yeah, you can try. Like, Demon Hunter is definitely, it's a fun deck. It's definitely a deck that appeals to a lot of people. You can have fun with it. You can have success with it. But it's not that good. Like, it's not that strong. So yeah, have knock yourself out. But this isn't the only Demon Hunter deck. We talked about it in the early impression podcast about Aggro Demon Hunter and the potential viability of that deck. It looks good. It looks like a deck that can definitely compete and might be even better than Relic DH. The build that we have in the report, one of the biggest takeaways, you cut Crixus. That card just is not good.
It's good when you're ahead.
Is it? I don't think, like,
I've played it when I'm ahead, and it's great. When I'm not ahead, then it's bad. And so typically those are called win more cards. We don't need to run those. I like the inclusion you made is most of the popular lists were cutting Sathino because she felt kind of awkward. It turns out the 4-mana card that discards her hand is even more awkward, and having another predation activator is really nice.
Yeah, it just doesn't, like, Crixus just does not work. It's a card that just stuck there and doesn't actually win the game. Also baits a lot of players to keep it in the mulligan, which makes it even worse. It's just super awkward. It doesn't actually further your game plan in any way. And you're not, you know, Magnifying Glaive is more flexible as a card. You can draw two with it, right? You don't have to min-max it completely for it to be useful with every attack charge. Crixus is like an all-in, and it's not even a good all-in. Like a 4-mana 7/7 can often just set you back rather than get you ahead. So, and decks aren't really terrified of it. Like, there are a lot of Renathal decks, so they can take the 7 for one turn, right? And if you don't, like, if your hand is empty, you have no follow-up, which means you have no follow-up for what you're doing for a 4-mana 7/7, makes it a lot worse. It kind of makes sense. Think about it. You play a 4-mana 7/7, great, but are you spending the next 5 mana you have the next turn efficiently? You have no cards in hand. You have one draw. So very often, it's not really a 4-mana 7/7. It's more like a 7 or 8 mana 7/7 because you're just floating mana on the next turn, which is a big, big cost, obviously, and not worth it. So that's kind of what the point is. And just cut it. It doesn't make sense. Like, metrics are awful for it. And that's kind of it for Demon Hunter. But yeah, class has recovered now. Balance changes made 2 decks viable. Pretty good, pretty happy for the Demon Hunter players who were kind of sad before this patch. Druid, honestly, Druid is going to be fine. Like, I'm seeing the trends also after the database close. I think Ramp Druid is, you know, it's trending towards the 50% win rate mark. It's adjusting. It can't, like, there's a difference between being 50% win rate with a 20% play rate and being 50% with a player of, like, I don't know, 8% or 9%.
No one's trying to keep this deck down right now. Like, if people were trying super hard to target Ramp Druid and it was still at 50%, that is a very different ballgame when you have a deck that the format is warped around, and even then it's still coming out in the green. That's a bigger problem. But here, like, it can still win games. Chabot Dennis got rank 1 with it today, but it's being played a lot less, and no one is trying to slow it down. It's just a worse deck. It's still fine. It's just worse.
Yeah, when you nerf decks, you nerf the play rate. You don't overly concern yourself with the win rate. The win rate is just an indicator on whether this deck is going to grow in popularity or not. The win rate is relevant for play rate reasons. And in this case, Ramp Druid is not going to rise in play significantly more than its current play rate. So at a 9-8% play rate, it's fine. And if it gets to 50% win rate, that's also fine. But it was kind of interesting to me to look at how Ramp Druid performs with a nerf Guff. Even though Guff is still the best card in the deck, what's interesting is that the nerf to Guff nerfed a card like Ivis, right? It nerfed a card like Oracle, because you're very often, Guff was a big enabler for your Oracle or Ivis swing cards. So when you nerf Guff, these cards dropped off. And maybe now you just don't want to run them anymore. And you kind of don't need to. What Ramp Druid needs right now, the meta is far less greedy than it was before the patch, right? Before the patch, Druid was concerned with like the mage matchup, which is super late game focused. Like you ran, you were playing against a deck that ran Rune of the Archmages and Parrot to replay Rune of the Archmages, and it was like tons of stalling and removal. So you needed a significant amount of threats. You're with current format, you don't need that many threats. You just need to survive to the late game and you're good, which means survival is key. So there are two tech cards, Smother and Starfish, even though it got nerfed by one mana, which kind of tells you that the card needed to be nerfed. As a four mana Starfish, I would still run two copies of it in Rapture it, because that card is so important for like some of the worst matchups for this deck. Naga Priest, Imp Warlock, Aggro Druid, all of these matchups, Smother and Starfish is a big deal. And the other card that's a big deal is Spammy Arcanist. Spammy Arcanist, great answer to Hydralodon, right? Specifically against Hunter, it's very, very good. So if Hunter rises in play, I'm noticing Spammy Arcanist is getting stronger across multiple archetypes. So I would even run two. And you run, when you run Starfish, when you run Arcanist, you always want to run Druid of the Reef, because Druid of the Reef is a big enabler for Spammy Arcanist. You can play it with one health if you need to bridge. You can make a value, like a trade with Reef in order to activate your Arcanist to chain clear like the whole board. So they are valued together and they make each other better. So I would just run two Smothering Starfish, two Arcanist, not worry about late game. I know I'm winning late game if I survive, right? If you manage to stabilize and get a Devour off against like a Relic Demon Hunter, you're fine, right? Like Relic Demon Hunter, the best win condition against it is Devour. If you can Devour their big Phantasms turn, right? They vault Phantasms and like a bunch of 8-8s, 9-9s in the late game. You Devour, you kind of win, right? They don't have a good answer to Devour. Unless they play their own Devour, which, by the way, I did check. It doesn't seem to be that good in that archetype. So that's kind of what Druid wants to do. Just survive. Aggro Druid hasn't changed. Obviously, it got worse, strictly because Ramp Druid is less popular. That is the matchup that gives it a lot of free wins. If Ramp Druid declines by 50% compared to before the patch, obviously that's going to negatively affect Aggro Druid, though it's still doing okay, at least early in the meta, because, you know, early meta, aggressive deck is going to do well. Okay, Priest. We start with Priest, we continue with Priest, and, you know, Naga Priest, obviously, looks really, really strong. I'm not overly concerned with this deck because for two reasons. One, and I mentioned it in the report as well. One, even though it looks kind of nutty right now, it benefits from, you know, high play rate of Demon Hunter, Relic Demon Hunter. Relic Demon Hunter, you look at its build. It's very passive in the early game. It does nothing. So Naga Priest develops minions, starts to play Wig, snowballs. Demon Hunter is not particularly well equipped in order to deal with that kind of snowballing because of its passivity. So Naga Priest benefits from the current format, and there are definitely matchups that, you know, give it a more difficult time if they become more popular. Specifically, Naga Priest is really bad in Priest Mirrors against other Priest decks, like Quest Priest, like Mass Removal, deck with good removal. Big Spell Mage really gives it a hard time, and Big Spell Mage is arguably underplayed in the current format. And also Shaman can do well, like if you stabilize into Devour, you pretty much win. And there are plenty of decks that give it a tougher time, right? Rather than just, you know, rolling over to it more often. So So that's like matchup related. There are decks that are going to rise and play that do better against Naga Priest. Also, it's very easy to run tech cards, right? Ram Druid right now doesn't run double Starfish. Everybody's shying away from Starfish because of the nerf. But if people figure out that you still run two Starfishes in your Ram Druid, that's going to affect Naga Priest. If even things like Charge Warrior, right? Charge Warrior is not going to be a relevant deck in the format, but in this report, I figure out that you want to run double execute, and Charge Warriors right now run one execute. So these are the kind of small adjustments that can make a big difference in Naga Priest matchups. And a lot of decks have that. I'm seeing it, that they're not really well equipped to deal, as well equipped as they could be to deal with Naga Priest.
They're not trying yet. If this deck rises in popularity, people will try harder. It is, like, it's not hard to at least slow them down.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, even if this deck looks uber nuts, like, people just don't like playing it. They don't like, the popularity, like I'm seeing right now, okay? So, over, like, past, 24 hours, there is no rank bracket where Naga Priest is more than 8% play rate. Like, Naga Priest is rising in play. And its popularity peaks at top legend, where it's still nowhere near 10% play rate, despite having it being the best performing deck in that rank bracket, right? It's competing with Big Beast Hunter, right? It's definitely competing with Hunter. They're like 1 and 2, and they fluctuate. But despite the fact that it looks so good, people don't play much of it. They don't. Like, it's a deck that's unlikely to be, like, this overwhelming force in the meta. And as I said before, the most important thing about a deck is its play rate rather than its win rate. And if Naga Priest is the best deck and it has a 7-8% play rate at peak rank bracket, then is it an issue? Not really. So I think it's fine for this deck to be good, and as long as it's not overwhelmingly popular, it's in a fine spot. So I'm not worried about Naga Priest. I think the deck is fine, and if people enjoy playing it, like you, then you can have a blast and do very well.
Thank you.
It's definitely, you know, I don't really see it as an issue. Blessed Priest is similar. I think Blessed Priest, you know, it's the worst deck overall, but it has its own niche, and it might get stronger if Beast Hunter spikes in play, which it is currently spiking in play. But Blessed Priest is like the only deck that beats Beast Hunter reliably. Like, it's the only counter when you look at Beast Hunter's matchup spread. It's the only way to be reliably favored against it. And Blessed Priest is more of a top legend specialty. It's a deck that's much more difficult to pilot compared to Naga Priest. And Naga Priest is not easy at all to pilot. Both of these decks are fairly complex, but Blessed Priest has an added complexity because it is far more reliant on, like, accumulating resources, and it stays and pretty passive in the early game rather than playing stuff every turn. And it just looks for that big swing turn in order to overwhelm the opponent. And that decision of when to go in can be more complicated and less intuitive, which makes this deck more difficult. So it only performs well, really, when you get to the high MMR brackets. But it specifically has a role in sort of checking Beast Hunter. So this is like, if you really want to counter Beast Hunter, you can do it. And it also seems to be developing an advantage against Naga Priest as well. So this is sort of a counter meta deck that specifically tries to target the best performers in the format, which means it has a role, right? But overall, if you're queuing into a diverse field, Naga Priest is the better deck. Now, Quest Priest, there are two more archetypes, not just one that's relevant. Boar Priest is very fringe and not very good. But in addition to Quest Priest, which seems to be doing okay, it's kind of mid. It's not that strong, but it's not that weak either. And it does do well against the Naga and Blessed Priest, right? It's really specializes in the priest matchups right now. And you got Thief Priest that starts to pop up. I think Bunny Hopper has been doing well with it, taking the list from Glory, hitting number one legend with it. Unfortunately, it started to appear after the database for this report closed. closed, so I couldn't really work on it. And people obviously ask questions about what do I make of this deck. This deck looks actually pretty okay. I would say it's comparable power to Quest.
Zach, you're supposed to say it's bad. I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, I was actually queuing into it a couple of times. Like, it seems to me, I think it's very similar to Thief Rogue in that sense where its win rate is horrid at lower ranks of ladder, because when people build Thief Priest there, they build like weird and badly optimized stuff. But as you get to the higher MMR brackets, like the archetype is more curated. Also, the archetype has a it's not like super high, it's not Boar Priest, it's not Shark Rogue, but it has a high skill ceiling. It can be a pretty complex deck to play. It's more complex than Quest Priest, for example, far less streamlined. So it performs better at higher MMR brackets, where it looks comparable in power to Quest Priest. Everywhere else on ladder, it doesn't seem to deliver very good results. But I would say a top legend and close to it, it's comparable. It's like tier 3, right? It's not better than tier 3, but it seems to be reasonably good enough, at least for some people to have success with. So Thief Priest is not actually the bait that you would think it is. It's actually okay, as long, again, you play an optimized build and you play it well, because it can be very complicated and you need to pay attention to what your opponent is doing and really need to track what their cards are and try to read their hand, because you need to find the right moment to Murloc Holmes. You need to find the right moment to play Identity Theft. You need to figure out, there are a lot of cards that you need to play in the right time in order to optimize your play, and that can be quite complicated. But if you do manage to navigate that well, this deck can deliver nice results. It can be okay.
This deck is also extremely Theotar resistant, because none of your cards do anything, so your opponent can have them.
Yeah, and you play Theotar yourself.
Well, of course we do. We play Psychic Conjurer. We are all in on taking their stuff.
Yeah, and obviously this kind of playstyle can appeal to a lot of people. But this deck is like, it's full attrition. This is,
It reminds me of Skolo Full Yoink. Reminds me very much of that deck.
I don't know. It's kind of reminds me, honestly, it kind of reminds me of Baron's Control Priest.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense too.
You have a lot of ways to generate value. You have an Illusia or multiple Illusias.
Your deck is like built around the Illusia mechanic.
Yeah, basically. You just generate value, steal stuff, survive, remove stuff, and potentially disrupt your opponent. So if you're into that, if you like that kind of playstyle, try it out. I will probably refine this build archetype next week and see whether that can be improved further. But the list that's currently propagating seems pretty good. I wouldn't say that there's anything there that's particularly offensive to a deck refiner such as myself. But yeah, so that's it for Priest. Class overall seems to be in a good spot with multiple playstyles, both proactive and more, you know, grind you to dust forever and ever. Not the most pleasant thing to play against. Rogue also balance change seems to have hit Rogue pretty well in terms of not killing Edwin Rogue, still keeping it viable but not making it too good. Obviously the deck still has a high skill ceiling, so now at top level play it's like a tier 2 deck. It's like hovers slightly over the 50% win rate mark compared to its clear tier 1 position when it had a 20% play rate and everyone were desperately trying to target it with things like Quest Priest. And still, it was the best deck in the format at higher levels of play. Now, its play rate dropped off to 5-6% and it's like 50% win rate. So, much more manageable. Not very good at lower ranks because there is no raw power that just pushes you up If you're less proficient at the deck, you're going to get punished for it. So yeah, it's in a fine spot. I think that's the kind of spot you want this kind of deck to be in. Thankfully for Rogue, there's more than just Edwin Rogue. Thief Rogue is also performing much better after the patch.
You can 30 card if you want to. We looked at it in the last podcast. We didn't have data yet. You found something.
I am, the more I see, I look at this archetype, the more I'm leaning that you just need to run 30. I couldn't say this for this report, but to me it seems like the deck with Jackpot and Trickster doesn't want to run Renathal. I know it's kind of crazy, but
you want to draw your relics or whatever. The same thing, the same concept. Draw your good cards.
You want to draw your good cards.
Trickster by itself, the inclusion of Blood in the Water, you can just Trickster Blood in the Water and some decks just kind of lose.
Yeah, I mean, this deck can pressure. This deck is about scamming and pressuring, and you have a lot of off-board damage, right? You have the Wicked Stabs on top of the Tooth, right? So with Blood in the Water, that can also go face, and Krabatoa can also go face. You have quite a bit of damage. So you want to kind of pressure the opponent. And if you can cheese them with a Trickster Jackpot with a good spell and replay it, or play Azshara. Azshara is like one of the best cards in the deck because, you know, you find a Colossal. It's not discovered. You find a Colossal. Hopefully it's not like a Neptulon or Uzumat or something. It's a class Colossal. You play it. You replay it. Stash, test. That's how you win.
I was playing Aggro DH, and my opponent did not very much the first few turns. They did Azshara, and then they did, I think it was a prep on the horn. They did the horn, and then they did the stash, and they played two Koloks, and I was Aggro DH. I just left. I'm all set.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do. Yeah, now I won't say the difference is big. Like, if the 30 list is better, it's better by a bit. But, you know, Renathal doesn't really make that much sense in this archetype when you think about it. So, try it out. I do like the inclusion of Sprint. I think this deck can run out of gas a bit too often and just lose because it doesn't have any cards in hand. So having that one copy of Sprint as insurance could be okay. It's especially good in the Renathal build, but again, the more I look at this archetype, the more I think we just want to go 30. Shark Rogue got weakened because of the Edwin nerf, especially now that the build that's propagating doesn't run Auctioneer. You probably don't want to run Auctioneer still, but you're very reliant on Edwin. And Bomb Rogue is kind of sleeper good right now because Relic DH loses to it pretty hard. That's what it wins against. But it doesn't really do much else. Okay, so Rogue, again, another class, got nerfed, but it's still fine. Very competitive, very diverse as well. You're seeing quite a few Rogue decks and Rogue variants that are viable, which is good. Shaman is back.
We got comments on Reddit last week. Why didn't they say anything about Shaman? Because there was nothing to say. But then earlier this week, there was something to say. And now there's a lot to say. You've been, I think this is your deck of choice right now, right?
Yeah, I've played like over the last couple games I've played, you know, in between working on the report. And yesterday when I was done with the report, I played like 50 games and had like a 66% win rate with this Control Shaman list. I'm running Raid Boss Onyxia. I'll get to it a bit later, but Control Shaman looks to be back in this spot where it's kind of 50-50 against everything. And everything is winnable, and if you can outplay your opponent, then you get an advantage from it. I talked about it a little bit earlier. About why this deck can appeal also to a significant number of players who don't like polarizing matchups. They want agency against every opponent and have a chance. And this deck really offers that. the nerfs to Druidan Mage just open up the late game, and Shaman's late game now is viable even without Snowfall Guardians. So you don't need the Snowfall Guardians in order to win a lot of games. Just cut the card and you're fine. Control Shaman is better than it looks because Meaty propagated a list and number one legend, and he had the nerve to run one Devour. No, you always run two Devours. Think about the DH matchup. How do you win that matchup? You survive until you can devour their Jade Golems. That's how you win. You're not supposed to run one Devour. Like, you're playing against Beast Hunter, you're going late game against two Devourers, you better have your own Devourers. It just doesn't make sense to run one. Never run one. Always run two Devourers. And Devourers are so important as swing cards now, without, when you don't have Guardian, right? You don't have great AoE. You have one AoE play with a Firemancer Flare Girl, and that's kind of it. Your AoE tools are your Devourers. That's the way that you can deal with wide boards. So I was looking at how important Devour is, and I was, you know, there's a 40th card that really I couldn't figure out, because Murloc Holmes is not great.
You don't say.
Yeah. So you need something. And I was thinking, oh, I wish I had a third Devour, not just two. I wish I had three. And I was looking at Raid Boss Onyxia. And Raid Boss Onyxia makes sense with Devourers, right? It activates Devourers. It's a swing card that allows you to clear an opponent's threats. And I was playing with it, and it was pretty impressive. And I felt like it was pretty good. It served me well. Whenever I drew it, I never felt bad about it. And it won me a few games, quite a few games. More than Glug won me games at. So
how dare you?
Yes.
How dare you? You come into my house and you say that shit.
But yeah, I would try Raid Boss out just because it's like a third Devour. It activates your Devour, helps you infuse them, helps you infuse your Denathrius, and it helps you clear your opponent's board, which is something that currently, without Snowfall Guardian, Shaman can struggle with. So that's my tip. Character carriers are not good anymore because School Teacher is good. And, you know, we had a situation before where there was no 4-mana cards, right? Like, the 4-mana slot was empty. You just had Okani. And we were saying, okay, play Caretaker. It fills the 4-mana. It works with Muck Pools. That was a few weeks ago. And now it doesn't make sense anymore because you're running Caverns and now you're running School Teacher. So suddenly you have too many 4s. And you can tell, I could notice that Caretaker is like dropped off significantly because of like redundancy. It's just too crowded over there now. So it should be cut. So I would suggest just run the 40 list that we have in the report and run Raid Boss Onyxia over the Murloc Holmes and try that out. I would like to see more data on Onyxia, considering that the meta is not particularly fast and you get to turn 10 very often. Raid Boss can just win a lot of games. And I think that card is quite underrated in how absurd the swing turn can be. Okay, Hunter doing fantastically well. Beast Hunter looks nutty. Out of every deck in the format, this one is the most statistically concerning because, unlike Naga Priest, I can't actually identify counters to Beast Hunter. Naga Priest, I can see, oh, there's some decks that can do better against it. You can tech also against Beast Hunter to some degree, but it's more dramatic with Naga Priest. They're more effective. Like, Smothering Starfish, something that really, really helps against Naga Priest. And I wouldn't say there are particular cards that target Beast Hunter in the same way. So Beast Hunter has a higher win rate in a lot of brackets. It competes with Naga Priest at top legend. I'm actually not sure what's top right now, based on the last few days. Between them, they're kind of competing with each other, but Beast Hunter just has no counters. Bless Priest, that's it. That's the one reliable way to beat it. But it's really hard to target. You can go 50-50 with Beast Hunter. But it's very hard for decks in the field to counter it. Now, I was thinking, okay, this is Hunter attacks. This is like early patch. Hunter always looks good. Its win rate is probably going to drop off as it spikes in play. And it is spiking in play right now very dramatically. Like, past 24 hours, Hunter's play rate is nearing 20% at the upper diamond bracket. Like, it's exploding. I think the report had something to do with it as well. Deck is rising, but the win rate is not dropping. Like, it's not even dropping at top legend. So this deck, like, there was a good reason for me to expect its win rate to drop, because it's happened twice this very expansion. Beast Hunter always looks good and then declines severely in its performance as the meta settles down and refines. But it doesn't seem to be happening this time. Like, the deck still looks uber strong as it rises in play, which might be indicative that this deck is just legit. It just wins. Now, honestly, personally, I have no idea how it wins. Like, when I queue into this deck, and I'm fairly high MMR at this point because I was winning so much with Shaman, I queue into a Hunter. Technically, Control Shaman matchup against Beast Hunter is supposed to be unfavored. Like, you're supposed to be unfavored as a Shaman. It's probably because most people are running one Devourer, but honestly, I'm really happy to queue into Hunter. I will give me Hunters all day. The deck is so predictable and what it does, and you can anticipate all of its moves, that I'm really shocked that it's winning so much, even at high MMRs.
You know why you're happy to queue into a deck? You know why?
Why?
Because your skill cap is so high.
Super high skill cap, that's what you're saying.
But they're playing.
I don't know how this deck, I honestly have also played some with it. It honestly feels like you win every game with like one card in hand left over and you're just about to lose.
And then you play a Mountain Bear and then the game is over.
Yeah, and then you somehow win. Like, this deck looks like it loses throughout the game and then at the end somehow wins. Like, somehow you always have enough to win. It wins in the least, like, it wins in ways that are just not impressive. They don't stick. They, like, the deck doesn't scream power to you. It very rarely does powerful things that feel like overwhelming, but it's so efficient and it's so effective that it just does it constantly. This is why it picks up wins at such a high clip. The deck is obviously good. I'm not disputing that it's good. I was just thinking, based on its previous behavior earlier in this expansion, that its win rate is going to drop off. And I'm not really seeing it. I'm not seeing it. But I will say that I'm still going to wait until the Ram Druids start running double spammy Arcanist. You know, the Shamans run double Devour. There are, you know, the Demon Hunters are faster with their relic generation. I think those things are going to affect those matchups. And, you know, we just had the report less than a little over 12 hours ago. So I really can't say what its win rate is going to be after other decks refine and maybe catch up. But it's still interesting to see that its win rate was not dropping on the sixth day of the patch. The sixth day of the patch, still win rate was not dropping. So Beast Hunter is just doing really well. And I honestly don't know why, because when I play against it, I feel like, you know, Fino just calls it unplayable. It's really funny because he picked up the deck and he says, oh, this deck is just unplayable. It's just unplayable. This is so bad. And he keeps winning with it. And he kept winning with it. It was like 1-0 and 2-0 and 3-0. Deck still feels unplayable. Because every time you win, you feel like you barely won. So
there's a lot of psychology there with like the way that the deck wins is just so unimpressive that you just don't respect it. But yeah, I'm not concerned with it, even if it stays this strong and like looks like this supposedly tier S deck with no bad matchups and like insane win rate, because the mini set is coming. And Beast Hunter is the type of deck that succeeds. It was really good back in the last month of Sunken City as well, after everything got nerfed. It's a deck that seems to take advantage of formats that are of lower power. Once you spice up the synergies with other archetypes and make stronger swing cards, then this is the kind of deck that starts to drop off. This deck is very good when other decks don't execute super bullshit plays, right? When you just make huge swing turns, Hunter just can't keep up. But when you play kind of a fair deck, this deck does well, right? Relic Demon Hunter, kind of a fair deck. So it does well against it. Doesn't do crazy, crazy things. And that's kind of the format right now. The format is kind of chill. Like, the format doesn't go crazy.
And it's not like, this is not Voyage or Barons or whatever where there's no power to be had, but it got reined in. You're not dealing with Druid having, you know, not doing Brandon Athreus on turn 8 anymore.
13 mana on turn 5. You don't get that, right? You don't get insane hero powers from Dawngrasp. Like, the late game is weaker.
After they nerfed Edwin, all the complaints about Sinstone Graveyard kind of just dried up.
Yeah, Rogue isn't as explosive. Shaman doesn't run Guardian. Guardian Macaw was the way... Like, Shaman used to obliterate this deck. Beast Hunter.
Yeah, because it would stop it from doing anything for 3 turns and then attack with 3 13-13s.
Yeah, it would board lock them constantly with Guardian Macaw, right? And just win that way. It would just... I remember doing it.
How dare you, twice in one podcast.
Like, that matchup used to be like 65% favorite, I think, for Shaman. And now it's like, looks like 50-50 maybe with 2 Devourers, something like that. So, like, there's a huge difference. Like, all the things that you nerfed over the last month were things that happened to beat Beast Hunter. So you can see why it's good. But again, if we want to have a best deck, this is the kind of deck that you're fine being the best deck. Because it plays fair Hearthstone. It plays, like, streamlined, you know, curved stone. Like, plays stuff on curve, develops threats.
It's got minion buffs and big taunts. And that's how it wins the game. Minion buffs and taunts.
It plays stats on board, buffs things when it can, right? It doesn't have massive swings. Has a few swing cards like Ickman, like Hydrolodon. But other than that, it's very inoffensive when it comes to play patterns. And also, pros are going to disrespect it, no doubt, because of the way that it wins and it's a very predictable play pattern. They're not going to call for this deck to be nerfed because they don't respect it. I'm pretty sure that a lot of them will still think that this deck just sucks. It's not just this deck isn't that good, but just sucks because of, reasons. But make no mistake, guys, this deck is nutty for like every statistically significant number of players, including those at Top Legend. This deck delivers insanely good results, better than any deck in the field. When it comes to build, I was rambling about the perception of power with Beast Hunter. You know, the build we figured out like weeks ago. Tice took that build and pretty much popularized it in the current format with the result that he had with it. But there are ways to potentially make it better. Better in specifically slower matchups. And we have an alternative build and that you can also try out. That's kind of interesting. and is better in the early game, like in terms of has better early game snowballing and a little bit more draw. So that could help as well. But sacrifices like Impor Luck matchup, Aggrodruid, because Samurro is cut from that build. You can try it out as well. That's it for Hunter. Face Hunter produces really good results, produced good results in the first 4 days of the patch, but it's falling. Like, this is the weird part to me. I'm seeing Face Hunter behave just like it did before, right? Starts off strong, declines later on. And Beast Hunter is not doing the same thing. That's what's kind of throwing me off right now. So we'll see what happens. And thankfully, thank God they nerfed Quest Hunter. I did a simulation of Quest Hunter's pre-patch matchups, and I applied them for this meta.
I assume it would have been catastrophic, right?
It would have been tier one. It would have competed with Beast Hunter. If you took the pre-patch matchup spread and you applied it to this format, Quest Hunter would be uber nuts. And unlike Beast Hunter, this Quest Hunter is the kind of deck that if it's really, really good, you're going to have a 20% play rate with it. So like it was going to be unbearable. Thankfully, its matchup spread, because of that nerf, is so much worse that it's straight up tier 3 right now. So that's something that I will note that's important. That the nerf was absolutely necessary. Okay, Warlock. Warlock, kind of interesting. I said in the early impression podcast that the curse build looks like the best one right now, you know, after the nerf to Kel'Thas. And then in those, you know, couple days that I had until the database closed, I suddenly saw that the Nathrius build is not dead at all. Like, it's very competitive. With the curse build, you can do well with both. Imp Warlock is in a good position in the format right now. It has pretty good matchup spread. Competes pretty well with Beast Hunter. Naga Priest more difficult. But it does fine, like, against Demon Hunter. It's doing pretty well. And the Nathrius build, if you just cut the Kel'Thas, the Gigafin, you know, all that cheese package, you can do very well with it. It's still fine. It still works well. And Denathrius is still a good card in that deck. So you still have the two options. Unfortunately, beyond Imp Warlock specifically, nothing else comes to mind, like, looks competitive. You know, the Curse Warlock without Imps, like Impless, or like just a small Imp package for Catastrophe, does not work nearly as well. It's just like it's dumpster. It's one of the worst decks in the game. Maybe the worst deck in the game that people insist on playing, because every time somebody swears, oh, this is actually good and whatever. No, it's not. If you want to play curses, you do it in an Imp Warlock deck. And you know, Phylactery is nowhere near. I'm not seeing much of it at all. So that's what you can do with Warlock. Mage, much like Ramp Druid, in my opinion, is fine. I'm sorry, it's not my opinion. It's just fine. Objectively,
in your interpretation,
in my interpretation, right? In my interpretation of the data and the way I'm seeing it, spooky big spell mage is already fine. Has a positive win rate everywhere on ladder. That win rate is not dropping off. Very good deck against Naga Priest specifically. So it's a great answer to this deck that's rising in play. So Big Spell Mage is good, genuinely a good deck right now, and Spooky Mage is on its way back. It was hit with the nerfs. The nerfs were significant. It was kind of suffering a bit more early on, but I can see Spooky Mage recovering its win rate. Might, you know, again, 50% win rate, might get back into that tier 2 range, just like Ramp Druid is shaping up to trying to get to, but definitely kissing that mark. Very competitive, very viable. Both of these archetypes are still viable. The difference is Mage used to have like a near not a near, a 20% player or something like that. And now Mage has, I don't know, 5% play rate in some rank brackets, 6, 7% play rate at like Diamond to Legend. Obviously, it's going to be very more popular. It's much more popular at like Gold through Bronze. But the point is, you nerf the play rate. The deck is far less prevalent. You're not encountering its, you know, persistent freeze mechanics over and over. You queue up into it once in a while. You're less likely to generate grievances from that experience. And obviously, you nerfed Sanctum, so that card is weaker. The freeze package is less persistent than it used to be. And Dawngrass does not scale as insane as it used to do. And honestly, Dawngrass is not that far away from being cut from Big Spell Mage. I will say it right now. The Magister Dawngrass Reckless Apprentice Mordresh package is still good enough to be in the deck. But it's at the point where I can see like there's a new mini set. Maybe Big Spell Mage gets some new cards. You start looking at that package as something that you can potentially cut. We're at that point. Obviously, Spooky Mage still wants to run that package, no doubt, because it's a Wildfire deck. But when it comes to Big Spell Mage, I'm noticing a big downtrend in the power level of Magister Dawngrasp. So, Mage is fine. Run 30 cards in Big Spell Mage. No reason for you to run 40 because Aggro Druid isn't as popular. Spooky can go 30 or 40. Previous pocket, I said 40 is probably the way to go. Obviously, that was for the first 4 days. That was like for 40 hours of data. Now I can tell you that 30 list is fine. More than fine. It's very competitive. It's actually better against Hunter. It's better against Demon Hunter. The 40 list is just better against the aggressive decks. Like Imp Warlock, Aggro Druid, stuff like that. Yeah, so Mage is totally fine. And you can definitely play with it and have success with it. And its win rate, I predict, even though its player is going to be down, its win rate is going to be almost as good as it was before the balance changes. Because before the balance changes, everyone wanted to target Mage. We had a huge play rate, so everyone were trying their best to target Mage.
Well, not even, they didn't even have to try and target. So many more people were playing Ramp Druid, and that matchup sucked. So now, you just... Nerfing Druid is a buff to Mage, then they nerf Mage too, and so it's probably going to get pretty close to equilibrium, all things considered.
Yeah, it's just going to get to equilibrium with a lower play rate, which is the whole point, right?
I like this balance patch. We have two classes left to go, so I'm going to say this now. I think this is a good patch.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Mage is weaker in a vacuum, but the point is to lower the play rate, make it less popular, so it doesn't overwhelm the format.
Mage is weaker in a vacuum, but the format is not played in a vacuum. You play against other decks, and so it just it fits. It's a better size to the piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. So, like, over the next week, I think that players who play Mage, who do decide to play Mage, are going to deliver similar results to what they did before the patch, despite the deck being obviously weaker. Because the meta isn't as ruthless as it used to be. But obviously Mage before the patch was a problem because it was had a huge play rate. Everyone trying to counter it. People were playing Ramp Druid. It was super popular and it still maintained a really good win rate. So that is the difference. But they didn't kill the viability of Mage, which is the point, right? I want them to make nerfs that don't kill archetypes. That keep them, but lower the play rates. And this is what they've achieved with Rogue, Druid, and Mage. So that's really good. Next two classes, those are the most questionable classes. But even one of those, Warrior, is showing decent signs of life with two archetypes. And Rage Warrior looks borderline, right? It looks borderline. I'm not sure if it's good enough. But I think it just needs one card from the mini set. I even say one card is enough to make this deck seriously competitive because it's got the early game. Like, if you focus on the early game, snowballing hard against like the passive Demon Hunter, the passive Druids, you can have a lot of joy. The build that we have in the report, I'm pretty confident that's close to being the optimal way to play in Rage Warrior and Ladder right now.
I've been playing some of it. It's really fun, especially when you draw Anim Extractor, especially when you draw in Budax. But it doesn't need one card. It needs a bunch of cards from a card draw spell, so it needs one card draw spell. It needs
Battle Rage. That's it. Yeah, I think this deck, add Battle Rage, we're done. Like, if you take this deck, you add Battle Rage, we're done. This deck, tier 2, at least. It would be a tier 2 at least.
Probably better. Anim Extractor and Imbudax are crazy, crazy cards. They both see play in Wild. You can see them enabling an archetype in Wild. The difference is they have more support cards. We just need something that lets us draw, like, two or more cards by itself, and that's enough. If it had actual Battle Rage, that would be more than enough.
Yeah. The other deck that looks okay is Charge Warrior. That combo is back with Galvanger and stuff. That deck runs one execute very commonly, run two because of Naga Priest. That's a big difference. This deck has a massive issue with Beast Hunter because of Mountain Bear. Like, if you play a Mountain Bear, then how the hell do you get through that in order to charge your opponent's face? That is an issue. That matchup is really hard. Ramdruid is also a really hard matchup, so there are things that kind of prevent Charge Warrior from being consistently successful. But this deck, you know, Warrior with like Frozen Buckler and Shield Shatter hasn't been good throughout, hasn't been even remotely playable throughout the entirety of this expansion so far. And this is the first time I'm seeing a deck that played, a Warrior deck played defensively and actually look, you know, tier 3 performance, pretty good. I think that will decline because Beast Hunter is rising, but overall, this deck is close, and I don't think it needs too much. One interesting thing, if you're running a list of 30, and you run a location, especially one with so many charges and is likely to going to stick onto the board for multiple turns, do you just run Dispossess Soul in this deck? Like, this was something that I saw on Reddit, a suggestion. I'm very curious about that. Just because, you know, this deck wants combo redundancy, right? So if you can play Dispossess Soul and find more pieces, like, you make yourself super Theotar resistant, and you're more likely to find your combo even faster. So I wonder if you just run Soul in this deck. I'm not sure. It is kind of slow, right? Warrior, this kind of deck, doesn't really want to spend a lot of mana on cards. This is 4 mana investment. Pretty significant. But it's an interesting idea. Like,
in
I
a deck
think
that's
Soul,
so weak to Theotar, I think that there's some merit to the idea of developing redundancy by discovering extra copies.
Yeah, if you can find another Tour de France, you can find another Galvanger.
Even another Battlemaster.
Yeah, like, just more... like, dig into your combo faster. I think that could be interesting to explore. I think Dispossess Soul might be a card that people are sleeping on based on what I've seen from Demon Hunter. Like, if you're running a location that has high uptime and just sits on the board for long periods, then I think that Soul could be a card that, you know, not embarrassing choice to play. But yeah, let's see. Mini set, I'm hoping for some sort of reload option for Enrage Warrior and maybe something for slower Warrior decks as well. But this class is definitely close. It's definitely on the fringes of the format. Paladin needs more help. Pure Paladin, no. Here's the problem with Pure Paladin. It's actually tier 3. Its performance suggests that it's a tier 3 deck. The problem is that is true for yesterday and a couple of days ago. The meta is getting stronger, right? The field is getting stronger. Decks are refining. They're becoming more efficient. The best decks are rising in play. Pure Paladin's got no scope for improvement. Like, Pure Paladin's kind of refined. It's kind of funny, but the build is figured out. And it's not good. And there's... at least from what I'm seeing, I'm not seeing any way to improve it. I'm not seeing new builds that, oh, hat, they're trying this new card and it's adding percentages. I'm just not seeing it because it's pure Paladin.
When you were just talking about Dispossessed Soul, I was thinking about all the locations at 3 health. I'm like, oh, Great Hall could do it. Oh, it's a neutral. Problem, I can't do that, huh?
Yeah, you can't do much with pure Paladin in terms of refinement. A lot of people, you know, running like Service Bell alongside Stonehearth Vindicator. It doesn't move the needle at all. It doesn't make the deck better at all. Like, I think that Hunter Ace has been playing Paladin, has been trying out Paladin, which is why this class isn't completely dead in terms of play rate. But it's going to be dead in terms of play rate because I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing any. Like, it's not complete trash. It's not complete garbage like it was before the balance patch. It definitely improved because everything got weaker, but it's still not enough to be remotely good choice at any ladder bracket anywhere. It's just not good.
So I want to know if you see something in the data. I do have one question because I found this when digging through deck lists on HS Replay. Is Mech Paladin favored against Beast Hunter?
Mech Paladin favored against Beast Hunter. Well, the good news is, Hat, that they do see play at similar rank brackets, right? No, it is not.
Okay.
It is not.
I don't have any sample size to work with anywhere. I doubt you do either. Like, there's just nothing here. It looked at least like mildly interesting to think about, but it reminds me of before Deadmines and in late pre-Deadmine Stormwind after a bunch of nerfs. There was a period where we were saying in the podcast, Baron's Rush Warrior is probably fine and no one is playing it. We'll never know. I'm pretty sure Voyage Mech Paladin's about the same. That it might be okay, but no one's ever going to play it at any level that we can read into, so we'll never know.
I think if you have a deck that theoretically might be, maybe, potentially be good enough, which I don't think Mech Paladin is, but even if it was, doesn't matter if no one cares to play it. I think that if you make a deck that's competitively viable, but nobody cares to play it because it's boring, I don't think you did a good job. Like you can't pat yourself in the back for designing a deck that's competitively viable, but no one wants to play it. Your whole goal is to make deck that people want to play. If people don't want to play a deck because it's too boring, that means something is wrong with that deck. And, you know, that goes back to my criticism of Sunken City, of that set that went super hard on tribal decks. Tribal decks have very low shelf lives. Like, they expire very quickly. Not expire in terms of power. They do also expire in terms of power, but mostly expire in terms of interest. They get old fast, they get boring fast, and very quickly people are going to move on from them. And Mech Paladin is a classic example. Like, even if it was good, which it isn't, but if it was, people will not care to play it because it's hella boring for a lot of people. So that's a problem, right? That is its own problem.
And listen, when I want to play tribal mechanics, I go to Battlegrounds.
Yeah, and my issue with Paladin in general is that the design for this class for a very long time has been boring. It's almost like, well, it's not almost like, its class identity is to be boring. And I think that's something that they need, that Team 5 need to look at and reconsider.
Paladin players really like it, man. Like, it's, I think that the idea of big numbers and holy spells and minion buffs is something that people really are drawn to, just the particular execution recently. It didn't really land in Nathria yet, and in Voyage, there were a couple different options that were all right.
I'm not saying, Hat, that you should stop half Paladin be this board buffing or generally buffing class that plays board-centric strategies and and buffs thing, buff threats and goes face with them. I'm not saying take that identity away. I'm saying this isn't the only thing that, like, it doesn't have to be the only way to play Paladin. You look at other classes. You look at Warrior. Even look at Warrior. It can do multiple things. It can be aggressive, and it can play defensively.
That's what we had with Voyage last expansion. We had Mech and Holy. We had the same thing.
Is it, though, Hat? Is it really that?
Mech and Holy Paladin. Are you going to try and tell me they're the same thing? Come on, buddy.
No, they're not the same thing, but I'm saying that too often it feels like Paladin is extremely streamlined in the way that it plays the game. And I think that we can make some strategies for Paladin that are not necessarily that streamlined. The design of Paladin is very, for me, it has a stark difference to what I'm seeing from like Druid and what I'm seeing from Rogue and Mage. And I don't think that you necessarily, like, Paladin needs to be, doesn't have to be the boring class. It can still do what it does now, but can we not invest design slots and card slots for things that are a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more combo-ish in nature, a little bit more power spiking nature, a little bit more swinging nature? Does every Paladin strategy have to be about playing incremental, about incremental gains? It feels like even Hunter is more versatile than Paladin is right now. It can do more things than Paladin does.
We had Voyage was a tribal set, and Nathria didn't land. We look back at Alterac, like cards like Stonehearth Vindicator. I'm cool with that kind of card existing. The idea of Brasswing, I think, is interesting, but it didn't really land. They've had some half-finished concepts here with Big Paladin and various Holy Shells that didn't necessarily make as much of a dent as I think we're hoping.
Yeah, but Big Paladin is also that kind of deck hat that just, like, vomit big stats to the board, and you know what I mean? Where is my Holy Wrath Paladin hat? Where is my, you know what? Forget about Holy Wrath Paladin. Where is my Linessa Sunsorrow Exodia Paladin? Where is that? Give me that. Like, something that's a little bit different from, you know, play a package, shove it into a deck, play as much of that package as possible, and be done with it. Feels like Paladin has, like, always, like, is about tribal stuff, only about tribal stuff. And it wasn't like that. It wasn't always like that. Paladin was more, used to be more versatile.
I mean, we look back a year ago, we look in Stormwind. I mean, they had to nerf Battlemaster Conviction a week and a half in because people were just dying to Paladin stuff.
I mean, yeah, but it was still, what was it about? It was still about the same identity.
Everything was designed in the Shadow of Librims. We're still escaping from the Shadow of Librims.
Yeah, the problem with Paladin is that when you have a class that's entirely reliant on putting stats in play, right? That whole thing, this whole class is about right now putting stats in play. If this is the only thing it does, then the only way Paladin is viable is if the stats in play are big, big stats. And it makes it kind of difficult to balance because you need to push it, right? And, you know, Barons, they pushed it, and there were multiple expansions where they pushed Paladin. It had insane win rates, right? Really good win rates. And they had to nerf those big stats. And then nobody wanted to play Paladin anymore. Because if you couldn't play really big, oppressive stats, then what's the point of playing the class? And that's kind of my point. That you're kind of cornering the class into doing only one thing. And if that one thing is not particularly powerful to the point where it wins a lot of games, then nobody cares to play it. It feels like Paladin is either tier one, and sees play, or it's not tier one and nobody cares to play it. Like Paladin, the only way that Paladin sees play right now is if it's tier one. If it's literally one of the best things to do. If it's not one of the best things to do, people don't play it. Look at Priest. You can have Priest sit through multiple expansions and not be anywhere near the best thing to do. And people will still play priest because they're attracted to all sorts of things that the class does. And the class does different things. It's a very versatile class, right? It can play like paladin, it can play naga priest, and then again, it can play like quest priest and thief priest, and feels like you can do a lot of things that are not the best thing to do, but people will be attracted to playing it. You look at druid, you look at mage, those classes have no trouble attracting players because they have versatile play styles and they can do multiple things, and they're more interesting. And even when they're not the best thing to do, people play them. Even when ramp druid was not the best thing to do, or the fifth best thing to do, it saw a lot of play because people were attracted to it. You look at rogue, you look at warlock. Those classes don't have to be the best to see play. It feels like if paladin is not tier one, it's dead. This is what it feels like. And I think that's a problem. It's either tier one and the best thing and has to be nerfed, or it's just not played. They need to think about that. Because that's not a good position to have a class be in. Like either it's the most powerful thing, or it just doesn't see play. Because nobody cares to play it unless you want to win. Or almost no one. I will say, there are some people who like playing paladin, but their number compared to other classes are very low. But yeah, I would like to see paladin be more than about just one thing, which other classes have the privilege of having that. They're just more versatile.
I'm waiting for Katori Lightblade to be good. That's what I'm waiting for.
You're going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait quite a bit, Hat.
I know, but I think that would be interesting.
Will it? Again, it's just stats in play. I just wish that Paladin, in addition to that, would do something else too. And this pure thing, this pure archetype, is just so one-dimensional. Anyway, yeah, that is it. That's it for the format. We'll see what happens with the mini set. I'm really hoping that they give Paladin something interesting to do.
Well, okay, but hold on. Even if we're right about when the mini set is coming out, we got another report. So the next report will be next Thursday, the 22nd. We'll do a podcast over the weekend. We'll see what develops. We don't have any balance changes coming time any soon.
Yeah, should be interesting to see what happens with Beast Hunter, whether this deck actually declines after refinement of the other classes. What's happening with Naga Priest? What's happening with Relic Demon Hunter? Can it survive? Because it's honestly, it's kind of in trouble and needs to adjust in order to maintain reasonable performance. What's going to happen, like recovery of Druid and Mage? There are a lot of interesting stories in the current format. But the bottom line is, you can play almost anything you want and you can do reasonably well with it. And the meta is far more diverse, and the best decks are not even that popular. So, cool.
Good patch. Good patch.
Yeah, this was a very good patch. Yeah, Theotar is still a sore spot for me, even though, again, it's not that powerful of a card right now.
It's not good, it just sucks.
Yeah, it's just the perception of power at this point. I think it's something you can't stop. And also, when it comes to tournaments, if they do like a Master's Tour or something, there's going to be a Master's Tour soon after the mini set. Theotar has more value with open deck lists, and I very much doubt that pro players will cut Theotar from list just because it doesn't statistically perform well on ladder. Because on ladder, you still have the threat of Theotar. You cannot run Theotar, but your opponent will still be concerned with it because you might be running Theotar. If you're running open deck lists in a tournament scene and you don't run Theotar in a deck list, your opponent knows it and that gives them some sort of an advantage. So I very much doubt, even though Theotar does not perform on ladder that well in multiple archetypes, I still think it will be brought to tournaments just because it's open decklist. Because the presence of Theotar has its own power and own effect on a game compared to the effect of Theotar, right? It's battle cry. So that's something to keep in mind and why I think that it's very unlikely that this card will actually decline in play. And if Theotar is 50% of the format, if 50% of decks play Theotar, which is currently what's happening, then we need to do something about it. I will say that it seems to be declining a little bit. I think it will decline after this report because we do suggest propagate a lot of lists that don't run Theotar. But, you know, even if this card declines to like 40% of the format, this is just the kind of card, like high grievance card, that you don't want to see in every game. And that is it. But if this is the only issue I have in the format, then we're doing well. We're doing okay, at least.
I'm telling you, better than just play one drops. You'll never worry about a Theotar again. I was just the first aggro DH list I was playing beginning this week was from Bandit Keith, and you refined it by cutting Crixus. He just posted a new list that went even lower that even cuts Athena and Predation, just all ones and twos, except for Glaive and Kurt. I'm gonna play that, and they will play Theotar and concede.
Yeah, but you know, Theotar is bad against aggro. Obviously, Theotar is not a good card against aggro decks. It's not even a good card against a lot of late game decks. That's kind of the point. It's not even that good in late game matchups. That's it for this podcast. We'll see what happens next week. We'll see what happens the week after. Again, next podcast, I'm not sure whether it's going to be in the weekend or maybe we delay it a little bit. So we can see all the cards of maybe the Miniset. If the Miniset comes out on the week after the next one, then I would like to record a later podcast in order to talk about all the new cards.
Do you have inside information? Do you know secrets? No.
I never know anything. They never tell me anything.
Well, I have no idea when recording the podcast. I'm planning in the normal time, but if it's not the normal time, then we'll tweet about it. So, I don't know. Read our social media. It'll be fine. But that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Data Rupee Podcast. Thank you so much to our VS Gold, VS Silver Patreon supporters. You're all wonderful. You can look forward to the next report next week in our next podcast. Next weekend, asterisk. Who knows when it'll be? It's a mystery. Thanks to Evil Day for the podcast transcriptions. Thanks to Steven Sensei for the intro and outro. And we'll talk to you all soon.
The Data Reaper Podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper Report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content at viciousyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.